Oh, Kevin, Harley, travelers, I didn't see you all come in. Welcome to the Penumbra. How was that? That was pretty good, right?
Was so unplanned,
Oh,
genuine.
man. Yeah, I didn't practice that three or four times at all and then totally forgot to do it when Kevin said to go. So, no notes. Perfect from me. Oh, yeah.
That
Hi all, welcome. Happy birthday if it's your birthday in chat. And welcome to the Q&A for season four. I am very excited. This was a absolutely wild season, I feel safe to say, across both storylines. But before we begin too much, I think Harley, Kevin, you have a couple of announcements you'd like to share. So why don't we kick that off with that? You'll be the first to hear these announcements. So,
We do. Do we want, sorry, do we want to start off talking about what we have plans between seasons 4 and 5?
yes. So in March, we have something that we're not going to fully announce yet because we honestly don't have all the details nailed down yet. But our plan is to put out something new, a different type of thing than we normally do, which is to say, not like a produced episode of the show and not a Q&A, like an entirely different thing, because we want to try testing out doing that in between seasons and see how people like it. Kevin, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about it.
I think keeping it as mysterious as possible is probably the move.
It's probably safest for us, but I think it would be similarly a Patreon only event. I think probably a live something, live online. So expect something to happen in March.
I'll add to the intrigue. They gave me a hint about sort of what we're talking about here, and it's very exciting, I want to say. I think people are really going to enjoy it, especially all you traveler heads out there. You Lord Traveler. Yeah, that's the fan name, right?
And that so that's March. And then in April, we're going to be coming at you all with a bonus episode between seasons. Not gonna say what the bonus episode's for, but we are coming at you with a bonus episode. We've already got it planned out. And then Harley, isn't something happening in May? Isn't just a little special thing happening in May?
Yes, a little special thing is happening in May, and you probably already know, but we are finally getting the chance to do a live, real live, in-person show in Somerville, Massachusetts, May 27th. I am so very excited. It has been 4 years since we've done that. As
Uh-oh.
I have said many times, I personally have become aged in the meantime. And it's going to be a brand new episode, which we've never done before. Every time we've done a live show in the past, we've been reworking for the stage an episode that already existed on the show. But this time it will be completely new. And I'm really excited to see how people like it.
I'm working on it
In the
right now.
past, you've always. Oh, sorry. Go ahead,
I was
Kevin.
just going to say I'm working on it right now, and I'm really excited to see
Oh, good.
how people like it. It's going really well.
Yeah, I know there's a couple people in the chat saying, of course, they're not local. They can't make it. Will you be releasing a VOD as well, like we have in the past?
That's the plan.
It's the plan.
I mean, you never know what happens with live stuff and like, but yes, we are planning to record it. So.
So, don't plan your lives around there being it. It's a live event, things happen,
That
but
is my
certainly
plan.
we hope to have that. That is awesome. Is there anything else happening in the next couple months? I would like to know if you want to share now, how many months are we going to be waiting for a new episode?
That's a very good question. So, our current plan, so we've talked to you about March, April, May. Our current plan is to come back at you all with season 5 at around, we said around the end of June. Please be kind. Please be gentle. Because we've got a stacked between seasons and we've got a lot of prep to do for that new season. So this is our current projection. I don't think we've ever given a projection before.
I think that might be true. I think we've always just been like, soon, when we can.
Mm-hmm. So be gentle with us, but that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for end of June to come back at you all with season 5.
It's so funny how we just come like with our arms full of caveats.
Because as Noah coined many years ago, we're still just some people in a room.
That is not what he said.
What did he say?
He said we're garbage people in a garbage room.
Garbage people in a garbage room. That's right.
That sounds more like him. And more accurate.
Yes, still true to this day, still true.
Yeah.
And also we're aged, we're tired. Like, and it's like, I think we've said this before, but like every season, not only does stuff happen in the world, but also between us, there's usually like several mental breakdowns that happen. And you can't anticipate exactly when those would happen. Like, maybe it would be great if we could, like, okay, in November, I'll have a mental breakdown. But they're kind of like a fun surprise that happens.
And then you never know how long it takes to recover. It's marvelous. Yeah.
So cool.
So we're going to, I think that's all for now. Unless there was anything, am I missing anything you wanted to add right now? Chat, by all means, I'll have my eyes on you. If you have any questions, you'll be asking, but I'd like to start kick things off with the two of you. This season was fantastic. I think broadly speaking, what are you most proud of or most excited about that happened in this past season here?
Oh my gosh. You know, we were like prepping for this and I forgot that we were going to be like asked questions. I was going to come up with answers.
You could ask me questions. I could give you answers. I'm fine with that.
One thing that I'm super proud of is the three-parter, The Mad Mirages.
You know, that was the first thing that came to my mind too, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's become one of my favorites, really all three parts. It was like a big logistical challenge, which people probably know the drill by now, which is we set ourselves an impossible problem and then we're like, hey, this is hard to solve. And so we knew like, okay, all the characters need to be able to cross the desert that it's impossible to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, oh no, and then they all have to do it in different ways too. So we knew that one group was going to be able to miracle their way across.
Mm-hmm.
But then that left us with two groups, but not only did two groups have to cross the impossible desert, we still needed to make it feel like the desert wasn't just actually easy to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really proud of the way that we figured it out and that we finally got to have mermaids, which are something that we've been wanting to do for so long. And that they are not the way we originally conceptualized to do mermaids, but I really like what we came up with.
It was a very Second Citadel take on the mythology.
Evan, do you remember our original mermaid idea?
Our original mermaids were fairly murderous, if I remember, right?
I don't know if we got to murderous. Maybe they were murderous. But our old, like, from years and years ago, when we were still just, like, bubbling up with random ideas, we wanted to do, like, lady pirates and hot male mermaids.
Right.
I guess. And then maybe they would be, like, seahorses.
Right. I remember that part of the reason it took us so long to get places with that was because we were like, this seahorse mermaids feel odd.
Well, yeah, and then also like we ended up making them female to like tie it to the Lamorak story, which we knew we wanted to do at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I guess at this point, like it's getting maybe a little old hat for us to be like, what if the opposite gender than what you expected?
We have done that a few times.
We've kind of like pushed that as far as I think we maybe can push it.
Chat points out very helpfully they would be called man-mades.
Yes, in this thank case. Goodness so. Somebody brought that up. That's one thing. At thing that happened to Noah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you did that sort of, oh, what if the gender is unexpected? And then I guess at the end of Second Citadel, you did something else entirely that you hadn't done before. How proud of yourself were you, Kevin?
Oh, well, I should not take all the credit for that. Harley and I have been cooking up the big twist that happened at the end of Second Citadel literally since season two. I don't think as early as Janice Beast, but very, very early. We knew that this was going to happen.
It was remarkable and exciting. And I don't know why everyone in chat's listened to it. I don't know why I'm dancing around it so much. And if you haven't, why are you here? Like, go finish listening. So if it's been that long, it's all been sort of build up to it. Why?
I think it must just have been us sitting down and thinking, okay, so like, what is the deal with the world of the Second Citadel? Is it like a flat Earth? You know, is it an alternate planet Earth? Like, what is it? And I think we determined it was a flat Earth, right? And then we came up with the end of the world, and then we're like, well, what if something is over the end of the world and it's just completely different? And then what if those people came up, or what if they had already come up? And it came from there. And then, as has now been revealed, I think the first solid hint of that is in, I think it's Hallowed Halls of Helicoid. Whenever Angelo starts talking about the podium. And I don't know that we thought it would take us this long to get to it, but it ended up being like we had so much to get through in order to follow through on it. Yeah, but it's been so many years.
Well, I think that one of the big things was once we once we determined that there was an end of the world, that comes packaged with the question. Right. Which is, and then what? Right. It's the same. Yeah. It's the same question that I think that we have when we are told that the universe is finite. Right. And then what? And it's much more fun for there to be an answer to that than not, I think.
I love the concept because it's been clear for a while. We've known that the edge of the world is a real thing, that these are a bounded place. But what is sort of on this, I'll call it a disc, what is on this flat Earth has been so sort of focused on that I don't know that a lot of people were even thinking about what goes beyond that. Every time there was a little hint of, oh, what's this weird metal near the edge? There was always, oh, also there's a giant slug monster and we better deal with that. So I love that the time you picked was sort of, okay, so now we need to reveal it. How about now, when all of the pieces are in place and the tension is so high and brother is turned against brother, and now here come the planes. it's just fabulous. It's so exciting. The whole buildup of all of those people coming together, traveling through the desert, coming to the same city. I don't think anyone... I can imagine if anyone's a fan of the Penumbra that they were saying to themselves, wow, I hope the Second Citadel is right and monsters are bad. So, like, I would feel really bad for that person if they couldn't read between those lines. But, you know, beyond that, it's just really exciting to get there. What's it like writing for so many characters at once? And this is a fine segue into Juno Steel as well, because you have built up quite the ensembles now in both storylines.
Harley gets mad at me for how many characters we've built up at this point.
Even though it's my fault.
Right. It's equally our fault. But one of the nice things about co-writing is that nothing's ever completely your fault. It's always also the other person's fault.
You always have somebody to blame. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I definitely, like, I give Kevin a hard time about this because he's doing all the work. And so, like, I imagine is very hard, is there's so many characters at this point that keeping all of their voices distinct from one another is just an incredible task. So I guess in some ways that makes it my job, since Kevin's actually the one sitting down and writing the scripts, to go through and be like, this character, like, this line sounds like this other character. I've heard this other character say this thing before. And I think we need to change it. Even if it's from Juno to Second Citadel, because we know the same people are listening to the whole thing. And so I still don't want there to be overlap. But it's definitely a lot to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, Kevin, go ahead first.
I was just going to say that I think that one of the biggest challenges that we run into on the planning end is how do we make sure that all of these characters have a moment, or have, like, if not an arc, then at least something satisfying, right? Like, it's not, we don't really have the time to do a full arc for every character every season. Then our seasons would be three times as long as they are. So we kind of need to pick who's the most relevant to what's going on right now, but everybody else can't just be set dressing, right? They can't just be along for the ride. They need to be there for a reason. They need to be significant. And that has been really challenging, but I'm really happy with how we've done it. I think that we set ourselves up with a massive challenge in that regard in Second Citadel. But I'm really happy with how the season 4 finale came out in that way.
And then I think sometimes the solution is just, we have to put some characters away. Now we're putting them away. Which is definitely, you know, what we're doing at the end of this season in Juno, is putting a number of characters away, which it sucks. Like, it's very heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To have to do that. You know, whether they're dead in universe or whether they're just not coming along for the ride in universe. It's very hard to say goodbye, but I think it's healthy.
On that note, there's a question in chat from Eloise Bernier. Have you planned to bring back any old side characters to season 5? There's a bunch of characters, especially for the Junoverse, that we haven't seen since season 1 or season 2. A lot of people in the chat are saying, where's the Prince of Mars? So maybe as an example, why don't we start there?
Are we bringing back specifically the Prince of Mars?
Yeah. I that seems to be the vibe. Yeah, they're dancing around it a little bit, but yeah.
I feel like this will be lost on people who listen to the recording later and cannot see the chat. I don't know that we know essentially what's happening in season 5 for Juno, but not to the extent that I think we know which characters are going to be in it, which is actually an amazing place to be in.
Sure, you have direction but room to play. That's marvelous. Yeah,
that's like the ideal place. So honestly, I don't have a great answer for that.
I think that something that might be kind of useful to take out of that also has to do with, like, our story planning process from big to small, right? Because we've got a lot of the big stuff down. And like I've said before, we always make sure that, like, if we're going to raise a question, we have an answer, even if we sub it out for a better answer later. Mm-hmm. But as you kind of get into the more granular episode by episode stuff, that we are often figuring out as we're going along, right? Because essentially, I think that leaves us a lot of freedom. For example, like, what has the vibe of the last couple episodes been? Has it been really, really dark? Can we get, like, a fun one in here, for God's sake? And I like I don't know. I even used to run my like classes back when I was a teacher the same way. Is that, yeah, I know the big level stuff, and then on the smaller level, it's very useful to have the freedom to feel it out.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you sort of a broader question then. No promises, but is there something from previous seasons, either a character or a concept or an idea you wish you had time to explore that you may or may not show up that missed?
That's a good question. We've had a couple of Second Citadel character ideas that we, like, I think at this point have given up on. Right, Harley? I think there's no space. Yeah.
I actually, yeah, no, I still absolutely have like a ledger of Second Citadel plotline ideas that would entail new characters. So like, absolutely not at this point. Like, we already have so many. Yeah, wait, what's the question? Things that we have already touched on and wish we could do more of, or things that we didn't get the chance to?
I guess either or. Here's your chance to tell us something that ain't going to show up again, but you wish could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's very funny to think back because, like, you know, we started writing this in 2015, mm-hmm. and things have changed, and we've changed. And so some of the old plot ideas, like, they kind of feel like, even if we did have room for them, they feel a little out of date.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. Mm. because it hasn't really been that long, but I guess culture moves fast. But I don't remember if we've talked about this before, but like, for years I like vaguely had this idea of like another woman knight, mm-hmm. Who came along after Sir Caroline. And I apologize if I have actually already talked about this in a commentary or something, but there's this idea of another woman knight who comes along after Sir Caroline, and she's not a sir, she's a lady, and she drives Sir Caroline insane because she kind of gets to have it all, like being feminine and everyone thinks she's attractive, but she's also a really good and tough knight, and Caroline has a really tough time dealing with that. And it's like a little bit of this like various waves of feminism like bumping up in competition with each other, but it just feels like not the vibe anymore.
Yeah,
that was the moment. Kevin, idea.
I don't know, this is a little bit of a sidestep from the question, I guess, but like I whenever we put a character away, I always wish that we could do more with them. And so there are, I would say that every major character that we've had who hasn't come back, like the one who's coming to mind right now is Ramses. I miss Ramses all the time. And there is like, this is, you know what I mean? And like, just because he was so fun to write, and often I don't really know if I've done a really good job with a character that takes place in a limited space until the very end, if I feel the sense of loss, like, man, there was so much I wish we could go back and do. In season 4, I feel that way about Tristan. I already miss Tristan quite a lot. And unfortunately, that tells me that I did it right. Right? That like, I'm supposed to miss him. If I miss him, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love both those answers. Here's an easy one, because it's I think a yes, no, or maybe. Is Sasha Weier dead? A couple of people in the chat saying that.
You know, that is actually kind of a hard question in a way. I think I do want to answer it.
Yeah.
That's okay, Kevin.
Sure.
But I want to answer it by referencing an email we got from a listener who might be in this chat. Seems likely. I don't know.
Worth saying, but, as a very, very brief side note, we've been getting so many lovely emails from people throughout the season.
We have been.
And they have, and just have, you know, it's difficult for us to respond to them because like sometimes, for example, if you make a correct prediction, like, we can't say anything to that.
Can't say anything about it.
but I want to let everybody know that we appreciate that so much. Yes, really keeps us going.
Emails are not going to nowhere. We are reading them. We talk about them with each other. They really mean a lot to us. We just don't have the ability to respond to all of them. Especially if they're right, yes. I guess. But anyway, we got an email from a listener who I'm not going to identify. If they wish to identify themselves, they can, if they recognize what I'm going to say. But they had a response to that last episode with Sasha. And I think what they said was something like, she probably died in the explosion, but I'd like to think that she made it out and is able to start some kind of life without the burden of who she used to be. And that's sort of my answer. And it's hard to say because, right, as one of the people who came up with it, I should be able to tell you, yes, she's dead, or no, she's not dead. But my real answer is she probably died, but maybe she didn't. And we'd like to think she didn't.
Well, she already went out of her way to kill Sasha Wire, right? And now Director W is destroyed. So whether there's anything left to live, it's sort of out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like that.
In the same way that it's satisfying for us to make it so that sometimes the audience doesn't know, in cases where we feel like we've done everything that we needed to do, it is often very satisfying to make it so that we don't know. And that's,
yes, and they look to us, the creators, as well.
Right.
I love that. That's the sort of pleasure of the undrawn map, right? It's room to explore if you want, but you're trying to tell a specific story that needs every detail can never be answered. Mm-hmm. All right, another question from the chat. Sarah Lunau says, character-wise, who was the most difficult to write? Who posed the most challenge to develop properly without falling into cliches? And I guess we can contain that question to this season. Mm-hmm.
I would give two categories of answer for this. And the first one is just in terms of voice. we had to work pretty hard to make sure that Sir Tristan wasn't just Foghorn Leghorn. I think his accent was a "there's a dog in it" moment for you, Harley. I think that was a demand that you made of me.
Yeah, it might have been. Okay, now we always say "there's a dog in it" as a shorthand. Right. I think it might require slightly more explanation. I know we've explained it before. I just am not sure if every single person who's listening remembers this.
We've told this story internally so many times that it's possible that we've telephoned it to death. But the way that I remember it is that there's a famous story about the game designer Peter Molyneux, who is like, has put together a lot of, has been at the head of a lot of really impressive games and is also famously pretty difficult to work with. Where like in the middle of, I think, Fable 3, the development of Fable 3, he like came into the room where the programmers were and just said, "there's a dog in it," and left. And Harley and I talk about that a lot whenever Harley has a specific demand. Good, like Hall of Famers include Juno's wedding dresses in this one.
That was a question in the chat as well. Someone was saying, did Harley ask for any dogs this season?
Did I? I know I did. But I guess I've been asking for a lot of dogs for like upcoming stuff. So yep. I'm trying to remember if there's anything that was contained in this. I think a lot of Mad Mirages was a lot of dog.
Yeah.
There's a dog moments. I feel like I drove you completely up the wall with Kuan Yi like experiences the entire like making and unmaking of the universe, and you were like, what?
I was excited about that one. That was less "there's a dog in it" and more something that you're totally justified in doing because it's my job to figure it out. But that was one where there are several versions of that scene of Kuan Yi's specific hallucination in there, because I would write like a whole thing and show it to you, and we would both kind of be like, this ain't it. Don't know why. But this isn't it. And that's always extremely frustrating to hear, but I'm here. I've made it.
And then I think, you know, the Angelo and Ale dreamlike conversation in Mad Mirage's, you were like, I don't know about this. And a lot of it, I was like, I'm just going to handle it in post. I'm just going to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do with it. And you were like, okay, there's dogs in it.
Always a dog in it.
Question from Mero in chat. Favorite joke or bit from this season? Something you were really proud that you slipped in?
There was one joke that I, in Embrace of Ice, that I ran by both of you, actually, both Jason and Harley, basically because I wanted to know whether it was even a joke. And I never saw anybody react to it, but I still have a very soft spot for it. And Juno says something along the lines of the bank account has more O's than the word that I'm thinking of. Do you know what the word that is? And he just says, ooh.
Ooh, yes.
That was good.
I actually just remembered some of the jokes because I went back into our chat because I was recently re-listening to, again, Mad Mirages, and I messaged you and was like, wait, these jokes are so funny. And one of them is when Rilla and Aram and Tal lose Damien, like he disappears with Tristan, and she goes, mother, and then all of the like birds and animals come flying out and cut her off. I think that's so funny. And then also when they're underwater with the mermaids and one of the mermaids says, release the sharks, and then they all start barking. That's just so funny.
No, those are very good. Kier from Lady Shakespeare, question for Harley and Kevin. Juno's monologues are more focused on his emotions this season. Was his new monologue voice difficult to figure out?
That's an interesting question. I didn't notice the change.
Mm.
So mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that it was easy to figure out, because I did spend a lot of time trying to, I guess what I'm saying is I wouldn't have known to quantify it that way. That was the difference. But something that has been really interesting about writing Juno this season is that he's at a stage of getting better and both recovery and just becoming a better, stronger person that is a difficult one, because he's no longer self-sabotaging as much. The things that used to get in his way, the really obvious things, are largely taken care of, not entirely, but largely, which means that when he's still struggling, there is a lot more soul searching that needs to happen, because it's a lot bigger of a question of what the problem even is, right? Before, I think it was a lot more obvious. It's like, okay, Juno, you need to stop being a dick. You probably need to drink less, and actually treasure the people around you. And he's doing that. So the question is now, like, if I'm doing all these things and I'm still struggling, what's going on? And so I think that probably the focus on the emotion is because he needs to dive a little deeper to figure that out.
I wonder if, I may be off base in asking this, but when you started writing Juno, he was so much that hard-boiled noir take, that's really been moved away from. How conscious was that? Or did that moving away from the tone come first, or did the characters evolving come first and change the tone?
Do you want to comment on that, Harley?
No, keep going. I'm curious what you have to say.
So I think that you know, this is part of the reason that we needed to redo Murderous Mask years ago at this point, was that I think in the original Murderous Mask, Juno is that character type. He's very, I mean, one of the biggest differences is that he's really cool. And I think that as we've gone forward, we've been asking a lot of questions about like what the extent to which he is cool. What's the cool affront for? Cool has a purpose. You aren't, there is people that are, there are, Juno's not the kind of person that is just cool by default, right? He works at it. He tries really hard. And then the question is why? And so over time, I think that what we're seeing is he's taking himself a little less seriously too, which is part of the reason that he's getting a little bit more ridiculous over time. There's also definitely a part of it that is over the course of season three, seeing him from other characters' perspectives and seeing like how completely goofy he is in that was a side of the character that I really fell in love with over the course of writing season three. And so it's been a lot of fun, and it's been really fulfilling to land on that a lot harder.
That's great. Did you have anything you wanted to add about that, Harley?
No, I love that.
I want to jump to another question that's popped up a couple times in various forms, and feel free to answer as much of it as you want. Nureyev, how much of his story had you planned in advance? Because, you know, his whole sort of debt storyline was not something we, you know, had an inkling of early on. So how did you come up with using him in that way in this season?
Well, we definitely had some portion, some outline of it by mid season three.
Earlier, we had, I would say we had a lot of the details hammered down by mid season three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we knew of the existence of the debt way before that.
Well, did we have to know that by the beginning of season three?
We confirmed that at the beginning of season three, but you and I were already talking about it even well before that.
Yeah. And then I think, well, I do remember that weird little aside that happens at the end of Mega Ultrabots where we completely break the rule of the POV character. Because Rita walks away and then we get that private conversation with Nureyev and somebody on the other end of the comms. And I very distinctly remember you talking about how writing that was a way of holding our feet to the fire, and making sure that we had to follow through on that stuff. So I know that we had more of it nailed down by that point. And we knew about Slip for a long time. Because I think people have been sort of asking us this question in various forms, particularly people who were aware of those earlier versions of Angel of Brahma. Because there's those early drafts where Nureyev has a childhood sweetheart. Holy moly, Pint Slice is snoring like you just would not believe.
Thank goodness there's our Pint Slice check. I know we're all worried about that. There's that beautiful angel.
Slice Watch 2023.
Like horribly snoring. Anyway, so yes, I think somebody is correctly saying this in the chat. Yeah, Slip is the new version of Kay, who might even have had a different name before that. I don't even know. But yes, we had, that character was originally named Kay and we changed it. So we had this idea of Nureyev's childhood sweetheart, and then we could not fit all of that into Angel of Brahma. So in the millions of drafts that Kevin wrote of that episode, that ended up getting lost and we focused on Mag instead. And sometimes when we rewrite and change to a new draft, we just throw away the old stuff, but sometimes it lives on in some form. And so I think in this case, we were like, okay, well, we decided we couldn't include a story about his childhood sweetheart, but that doesn't mean he didn't have one. And so that was the basis for developing this storyline. So in some ways, I guess we've had it all the way back since season one.
Yeah, we've had a ton of Nureyev down since Angel of Brahma, I would say. Like, did we know about the debt in Murderous Mask? No. But I would think, no. But I think that even by the end of season one, you and I were having conversations about, like, what is this whole deal? What is this jerk doing with all this money? Like,
right. That was a huge problem.
Right. That was a problem, a narrative problem that we were aware of from pretty much the very beginning. And so I think I remember our very first conversations about the debt were around the time that I was doing 40 drafts of Angel of Brahma.
Remember back when we had time to write 40 drafts of an episode?
Yeah. But did we have time?
Oh, we were spry young things of 25. We could do anything.
I was much more willing to work myself to a nervous breakdown back then. I think that.
Yeah, well, you hadn't had as many nervous breakdowns, so you had like more in the tank, you know.
That's true. I'm more experienced now.
I don't think Kevin and I were ever spry, Harley. I'll be honest.
Relatively.
You can speak for yourself. Oh, relatively, yes, absolutely. More spry than now. Well, I hope that answers it, chat. I know my entire Tumblr feed is obsessed with this question, so I hope that actually helps. And I feel pretty confident we'll see a little more of Nureyev next season. Don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but it seems like, if I'm reading between the lines...
Draw your own conclusions, yeah.
Yeah. A couple people I saw Sarah Deal point out, now Juno Steele is a soft-boiled detective. So,
that's so please, funny.
You need, I wanted to make sure we didn't skip over that.
Oh my God.
That's a top tier joke.
Yep. No, he's, sorry, I just lost the question I had, because this is useful.
Because everyone's talking about a soft-boiled egg now.
Here is a question I think you can answer really quickly. Will the Penumbra change forms again, like when it was a hotel/train?
Oh my God, no.
Yes, thank you.
Also, I'm really sorry if people can hear the car alarm going off outside my window. It does that with frequency. I have had it up to here with sound designing like the Penumbra and its various forms, and it was like really funny how long it would take me to sound design just those little intro and outro sections that didn't contribute anything to the story. And at a certain point, I guess it was probably season three when I gave up. Whatever. I was just like, I've had it. And I just stopped. And I was like, I'm keeping the rain and I'm keeping the music and we're in a void. I don't care. And maybe nobody will notice. And people noticed and asked questions. And I refused to answer them. So really, I'm very lazy. That's your answer.
I don't think I should let that self-evaluation stand. No, I don't think we've ever answered that publicly, but it's not because we're being secretive. It's just
whether I'm lazy.
No, but why the intro and out, why the intro and outro changed so much? And it, like,
I just couldn't take it anymore.
A lot of it was it
that's took, true. You answered it to me because I was one of those annoying people who was obsessed with it.
It took you a ton of time every episode, and we're already crunching hard to get every episode done. So I don't know.
I mean, honestly, even without that, the intro and outro take a really long time to put together. And I'm just like, I'm always grumpy about it. Like, that's by far my least favorite part because it's not creatively interesting, satisfying. It's the same every time. And it's like a chore for me. So I just wanted to make it as efficient as possible.
I saw someone say we're planning to go for about an hour, so make sure you get any last questions in for the next 15 minutes. Allison Hull asks, any plans to have more episodes in the Juniverse from other people's point of view? I loved when we did that. I don't even know if you planned that far ahead. And certainly we've lost a number of people who could have you know, been point of view characters, but have you thought about doing that anymore?
Kevin, do you want, I could answer it, but do you want to?
Yeah, I'll say, because that's on like the episode planning level, nothing mm-hmm. is set in stone, but my gut says no. Just because that was season three's thing. And there are times when I would love to go back and kind of crib a previous season's thing. But one of the things I think that makes it special is that it's limited, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple questions here, Harley. Well, first, just a lot of praise for the sound design, but then someone specifically asks, you know, what this season was the biggest challenge for the sound design?
Biggest challenge? God, I should start like taking notes as I go so that I can remember this stuff. Kevin, do you remember any moments where I like was really grumpy about sound design?
Not moments where you were grumpy, but I do remember moments where you were triumphant. I don't know if you want to talk about one of those instead.
I remember those better. Actually, I think that something that drove me very nuts was Infernal Grind. And having to do the whole sequence where we go through multiple days in the prison and the whole routine. And so it's going back and forth with like Juno's narration and stuff that Palomine is saying over the intercom, and the different like backgrounds of all the different places in the prison that they go. And then some types of backgrounds are more challenging for me than others. Like, for example, I generally find something like a cafeteria, which did happen a couple times in that episode, quite challenging, because when you have sound libraries and stuff, you're definitely going to be able to find restaurant background, but that doesn't sound the same. And then in this case, it was like everybody's eating and nobody's talking. That's not like a sound effect that exists.
Yeah.
Have, like a giant room full of people eating and nobody talking, because that's a really freaky thing for there to be. So then it's like, okay, I guess I just need to take many, many sound clips of one person eating and layer them all on top of each other and add some reverb or something. So that's like kind of a misery. And then it's just for the 3 seconds that Juno's in the cafeteria. So it's just like an incredible amount of audio tracks and work for just a 3 second reward. So that was very frustrating. The whole thing was absolutely saved by Ryan Bybert's incredible version of Bolero.
Yeah.
Music that he wrote for it. But that was really frustrating. For moments that were wonderful to design, I'm going to go back to Mad Mirages again. I was thrilled about the underwater episode. That made me so happy. That, on the other hand, that was like relatively low difficulty and high reward.
Yeah.
And well, it was harder to do the part where they come up out of the water, but I was really happy about how it came out. And I was really happy about Mad Mirage's part 3 as well. And like all of the dreamlike stuff and the singing, that was super rewarding.
Is, I see Ashley Wilson in the chat says Big Mermaid. I remember how proud Harley was about figuring out Big Mermaid. Yes.
You're Big Mermaid. She's huge. All I want to do is see you turn into, Kevin,
a giant woman.
A giant woman.
Yeah, that whole episode, the whole Infernal Grind was very anxiety inducing. The sound design alone was amazing, let alone, you know, the stakes and the tension there. It was, I'm just thinking about it and my heart's starting to race a little bit.
Thank you.
So I think that's,
thank you for reporting your discomfort to me. It's a high compliment.
You're very welcome.
We love to hear about it.
Oh, good. Another slice update. That's perfect. She is perfect. Okay, good. Still perfect, chat. No worries. I see. Oh, okay. I see there's so many questions. We don't have a ton of time. A lot of giant women joining the chorus. And then let's see here. Here's one I really like, and I'll stipulate for both Juno Steel and for the second Citadel. Can you both give one word to describe next season for each? So four words total between the two of you.
For Juno, I'll say yearning.
Oh my God. You can't say yearning.
It's a word. It's one word.
It's too late. It's out there. That's all I had to
say. Not this group of people, you can't say yearning.
Yearning.
I have a word, but I'm really worried that it's not accurate. Like, it's not really representative of what it's going to be. It's just, so I'm going to say it with that caveat, but it's sort of the feeling that I guess I have, but redemption.
Hmm.
I like that.
Okay. So not necessarily a plot, but a feeling, a mood, redemption. Yeah. I'm back. I was there. Now I'm here. I'm so with it. And then for the second Citadel.
Let's say. Okay, I don't mean this literally, but Phoenix.
Mm.
Cool. I like that.
And Kevin?
I don't mean this literally. And it's also not as good as Harley's. But cataclysmic.
So you all heard it here first. That's your first taste of next season for both. I'm very excited. Just a couple minutes left, so I want to hit a couple last little points. First off, importantly from both of you, Lord Arm update. How are we feeling? How is the boy? Are we proud of him? Where's he going from here? Why isn't there more fan art of Talfrin and Arum building a zombie together? It's a little crazy, right?
I'm actually really pleased and excited about Lord Arum stuff going forward. Mm-hmm. Like, we just had a conversation about stuff regarding his character going forward, and I'm really happy about it. It is not where I thought things would go with him at all when we first came up with him as a character. And I'm really excited about it.
In Second Citadel, he's one of the characters whose direction I'm most excited about. That's not me pandering to this specific Jason me. Audience. but that's the truth. I'm extremely excited about what we have planned for Lord Arum next.
And I do also want to say, again, with the caveats, there's not going to be like a huge specific focus on him, just in the sense of like, there's so many characters that we do have to account for over the course mm-hmm. of the season. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect it to be like, all right, it's Lord Arum all the time for this whole season. But he will have an arc and there will be stuff happening with him. And I am very excited about it.
Right. A little behind the scenes, when we're planning out the, like, a season or a whole huge story arc, especially in Second Citadel, we do have separate notes for each character, and kind of where they're going to go and what they're going to do. So Arum's arc for the span of time that we have planned is really exciting.
I mean, this can be totally off base, just my impression. I always feel like the Second Citadel is all of these characters working through these events, whereas Juno Steel is all these events working through this one character. So this, the whole feel, you can't really get that focus. It's not really the same thing. It's not going to be the season of Arum. If it were, I think people would be fine with that. But just say, yeah. I did a quick poll. 100% of the voters within this household would be fine with that. all right. So we are nearly at the end here. I wanted to do two more things. And the first thing, of course, was I think you guys had one more announcement, one more thing you wanted to bring up before the end.
Indeed, we do.
We do have one more announcement. Kevin, do you wanna or should I?
I can do it. I see a lot of people in chat asking about it. We're excited and excited to tell you all that season 5 is going to be the final season of the Penumbra podcast. Both Juno and Second Citadel are going to wrap up over the course of season 5. We've been prepping for this for a long time. I'm so excited for where I feel like we're, I feel like we figured out the right spot.
Me too. I thought I would never ever be ready. And now I feel ready. And I also feel proud of ending it because one of my greatest fears is like just carrying on as long as we can still make any money off of it, even when it's not, you know, doing anything interesting anymore. And I have always wanted to end it before it got to that point. And I think we're going to be done with the stories that we're telling over the course of another season.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that after that, that's the end of your creative outputs entirely. Is that correct?
That is not correct.
Oh, silly me.
So we're not going to say too much about it now, but you should not expect the Penumbra podcast to be the last time you hear from us.
Well, I'm very excited. This is not the time to get it. It's not over yet. What am I doing? Wow, great season, incredible storylines, and can't wait for the end of them to wrap up. So we know we're going to have some really exciting finales for both. We're going to see our favorite characters living large, I hope. I guess before we finish, requested many times, I felt so bad, but it's really a great way to end after that news. Do you both mind joining me in a breathing with the boys?
Yeah, take us away, Jason.
All right, so. Travelers, I've been Jason Mellon. It's been my pleasure to read through your nonsense. You are so special to me. And I've been joined today by
Harley Takagi Kaner
and Kevin Vibert.
All right, let's wrap it for today. We had a great breath. We felt everything we needed to about Lord Arum. And I will see all of you that can make it at our live show. Goodbye. Woo! For now, travelers.